Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Sitting across from me in the studio this week is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. And you've got a question, you need to email that to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet it at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, let me pose something to you that's been posed to me a lot from our listeners in the last 24 hours. Are you getting a lot of complaints about road construction? Because by golly, we're getting a lot of complaints for you about road construction.
Yes, we are. It's one of those things that I always consider an important issue, an issue that I'm being confronted with when I'm either running or in the grocery store. And invariably, right now, the one that's leading the pack is all of the construction that's going on, not in just in West Lafayette, throughout the community. And again, we try to do this in a way that's going to be somewhat predictable, and we try and do it in a way that's going to basically allow one road to be shut down and then other roads to be utilized to pick up the traffic. This is one of those perfect storms. With the season that we've had, with the amount of rain that we've had, it's delayed a lot of our projects to get to the point where they can be completed.
And so you have multiple things going at once.
Exactly. Some of the routes that we were dedicating for an alternative while one project's going on are now being shut down because of the beginning of another project. And it's unusual. You know, I think, first off, it's unusual to have so much construction going on, period. And second off, it's unusual to have the weather dictate a lot of what our activity is going to be. But in West Lafayette, we've got a pretty unique system. The way we do it is, obviously, it's not just sort of willy-nilly. It's not random. We've got a capital plan through our engineer's office, and that capital plan is what we use as I'm going to say it's what we use to predict our projects, but the reality of it is it's what we use to predict the funding for our projects. And oftentimes that's what dictates the timeline. When the money's there, when you've budgeted the money, or if the feds or the state have given you money for a particular road project, you're for the most part under obligation to spend that money within a certain timeline. So oftentimes when we have two projects that seem to be paralleling each other with this, with what seemingly seems to be the sole intent of frustrating our citizens, the logic behind that is mostly the money and then the timeline to use that expenditure.
Do you have any updates you can give people? Because I've had people ask me about various projects from Happy Hollow Road to Cumberland and Salisbury. Mm-hmm. Anything you can tell people that will make them a little bit happier that there's maybe an end in sight?
Well, that's the only thing I can tell them. There is an end in sight. Cumberland should be open by the end of this month. All things going well, we should be able to actually have flow on that road towards the end of August. Happy Hollow, it's just in the beginning stages. The first thing that we needed to do is we needed to do some repair work on the intersection at Happy Hollow and State, or in North River Road. That's been done, so that segment's open. But we are actually now starting to get into the meat and potatoes of doing the road work. And with a road that's it's a major arterial, with a road like Happy Hollow, we're going to do it in phases. So we're going to tear up one side and put the traffic on the opposite side in one direction. We get the one side done, then we go to the other side and do the same.
By the way, if it's any indication of what the public thinks of this, mm-hmm. especially the month left on Salisbury and Cumberland, our producer Betty is dancing in the other room at having only a month left of this stuff. So,
and a mighty fine dancer she is, too. But the fact of the matter is these things are always inconvenient. You know, it's always inconvenient. And when it comes to road projects, you know, we've kind of transitioned, you know, as a city and how we approach these things. It used to be one of the best things that we did is we fixed potholes. And then we started thinking, we need to get a little bit more involved. So we'd fix the road. And oftentimes the way that we repaired roads, and this is 20, 30, 40 years ago, is you would repave them. And that would last a year or two. But now we're a little bit smarter and we have a better understanding of actually what causes the road to deteriorate. And we know that if we're truly going to repair a road, we have to get all the way down to the dirt and in some cases even below that. And then there's utilities to consider as well. Oftentimes, depending upon how long it's been since that road's actually been addressed, the utilities such as water, gas, electricity, cable in some cases is somewhat like a ball of spaghetti. And then we as engineers and as the city and our contractors need to go and sort those out. And some of them can be pretty sensitive. When you've got a gas line that runs underneath the road, you got to be very careful with that, or else you're going to make national news and they'll be pointing at a great big hole in the ground.
So let me pose to you a question that came in from one of our listeners, Jeff. He wants to ask you about kind of intergovernmental cooperation as it affects road construction. He says, is there any mechanism between government entities to coordinate road closures for construction? If so, why has it failed? If not, why not? And he says, how does the current fiasco make you feel about government in general?
Wow, lots of questions there.
Yes.
Well, first off, yes. we have monthly meetings with the Tippecanoe County, their engineering team, City of West Lafayette engineering team, the Area Plan Commission, the City of Lafayette engineering team, and the state. And believe it or not, there is a plan that goes along with this. But like I said a little bit ago, oftentimes these plans are based upon the perfect case scenario. And that's never actually what happens. Now, we do build in contingencies, but you really never know what you're going to get into until you get into it. And we can do all the pre-planning in the world. We can do all the coordinating in the world. But until that first shovel hits the ground, we don't really know what's going to go on. One of the biggest challenges we have is when we do tear up a road or we do plan to tear up a road is trying to make sure that people know about the alternative routes. You know, we send out news releases. We ask you guys to read it on the air. We ask, you know, the newspaper to print it. We talk about it at our public meetings. And oftentimes we are so acclimated to using the same route that when that route is shut down and we offer up alternatives, it's confusing. So, you know, in order to, I guess the best answer to the question, the answer is yes. The answer is I know. And then the other answer is I'm sorry.
Let me move on to other listener questions that came to us. Zach writes in and asks, so with the annexation of Purdue, the joint board was created. He says, however, it's a board that's not discussed very often in public. And he thinks that information about the board beyond its agendas don't seem to be readily available on the city's website. He wonders if you could give some background about the intent of the board, the powers it has, who sits on it, whether especially whether there are any residents on it, and whether a greater amount of, his words here, proactive transparency can be expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Zach actually addressed this issue at council earlier this week, and he brought up some valid points. All the meetings are documented. They're all recorded. Minutes are taken. And we have just not yet figured out an efficient way to get that recording on to our website. So with Zach's guidance, we're going to go ahead and see that that's accomplished. But the board itself is a direct result of annexation. It's a governing body that deals with the university and city issues. On the city side, it's our facilities director. It's our public works director. And it's our director of development. On the university side, it's got a representative from the president's office. It's got a representative from their legal team, and it's got a representative from, I believe, their financial office. Or no, their facilities office, I'm sorry. And that board basically has these discussions about how we can best function together as a unit. Their decision-making powers can, in some instances, be fairly great. Right now, they're having some conversations and some dialogue about the State Street project. They're all public meetings, and again, as I said, they're all basically documented. It's just that we are still trying to get that process to the point where it's going to be on our website. I believe we've had transcriptions of the meetings posted on our website, but Zach actually asked at the last council meeting about actually getting the audio tape on there, and we're going to see what we can do right now to get that done. But having said that, our website's going to be basically redesigned here in the very near future anyway, so hopefully we'll be able to have I like what Lafayette's done with theirs. They basically have a big button at the top of their screen that says transparency, and you hit it, and it takes you to all these different documentations that you could use for information.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis today. And send us your questions. Ask at WBAA.org is the email address. Tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. We got a question in from Tom who writes, have you taken a walk in the University Farms neighborhood recently? And if so, did you count the number of times you had to duck under branches extending across the sidewalk? This sounds like something we've addressed with Mayor Rozworski the last couple of programs. Lots of overhanging branches. Who's got jurisdiction? What do you have to say to Tom?
I feel your pain. I'm 6'4", and I often run in neighborhoods like that, and I get whacked all the time. The fact of the matter is most of our tree maintenance is handled by our tree fund group, and it's a group of men and women who go out, and their responsibility is basically to trim back the trees. And they're very proactive, but they're very finite. And there's a group of about six or seven that do it, and they do it all through the growth season. And they've got a fairly methodical way that they go about it. They set out different districts, and they go and hit it, and then they collect the leaves and go ahead and dispose of them appropriately. However, what we've always been able to do is that in the event that there is something that presents, whether it be a line of sight hazard or if it's just a physical hazard because the limbs are too low, please call the city. Our street department also does that, but they do it as part of their routine. It's not their obviously the only job that they do. But if there's a low-hanging branch, something that needs to be immediately addressed, we'll get on it. I know Doug Payne, our street commissioner, cuts limbs, you know, all the time. I mean, they get out there and get it when their trash routes are done. And when the other things that they got to do are done, they'll go out there and go ahead and handle that. And it seems to be a fairly efficient system. The good thing about West Lafayette is we've got our older neighborhoods that have a lot of older and established trees. Those limbs don't really have a tendency to hang in the right of way. Sometimes the line of sight issues can be a challenge, and we can go ahead and fix those. But in our newer neighborhoods, we've got a lot of young trees, and those limbs do present problems. And those are the ones that the tree fund folks, for the most part, are directing a lot of their resources on.
I'm working on a story right now to change topics here about Boiler Gold Rush International. And this is the program mm-hmm. that helps to try to acclimate international students who are coming to Purdue for the first time to the campus, to mm-hmm. the state, to the area. And one of the things that's being done this year I wanted to address with you, which is more intensive cultural and English language training, because there's been a complaint from some faculty and staff on the campus that there was a bit of a communication gap, frankly, between the otherwise incredibly bright people who are coming from overseas, but they're not able to communicate as well as they might otherwise be able to. Has the city been involved in trying to help this acclimation process at all, or is there anything you might consider doing to try to smooth that along a little bit?
Yeah, you know, we are, for years, first off, we always have the opportunity to meet and greet with our incoming freshmen, whether they be international or domestic. We always have that opportunity, and that's always really of interest to all of us over here in the city. But when it comes to trying to assimilate into our local community, what we do as local government is trying to provide them with the resources to make that assimilation a little easier. What we've learned over the years is that there is comfort in numbers, and then the familiarity oftentimes is the one that sort of dictates how many people are going to be involved. So if we can get a group of students, regardless of where they're from, and slowly but surely integrate them into our process, that seems to work well, specifically if they come in large groups. Just for instance, our Chinese students. There's a significant number of Chinese students here at Purdue University and in the city of West Lafayette. But because of that, there are some that have been here 1 year, some that have been here 5 years, some that live here now. So what we're trying to do is we try and create an informal networking system for them so they can get to folks to give them some assistance when needed. The other side of it is oftentimes we find that a lot of our international students are somewhat shy when it comes to asking for help, that they're somewhat shy in reaching out to whether it be local government or whether it be something involved in the administration at Purdue. So it limits our ability to provide that assistance. Every year, we have an international, it's called our International Festival, that we host here in the city of West Lafayette. That's where we had that first sort of rush, specifically with our freshman population. And that's where we can hand out resources to better enable them to sort of assimilate within the population. And then again, through a lot of the administrative processes over here on campus, that assistance is done as well. There's a lot of groups that have outreach programs that try and provide that kind of guidance and that information.
Have you needed to do more in recent years as the international population has grown and grown on campus?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're finding that's getting to be more and more of a, I wouldn't say it's a problem, but the responsibility is getting greater and greater because it really does bode well for us as a community. You know, there's a lot of issues, whether it be involved with retail opportunities, whether it be involved with residential issues, because in a lot of folks, there is the potential of possibly having a banned landlord, and they might not feel comfortable in making a complaint to the city. And then it's also just part of assimilation. You know, if they feel more at ease here, it's going to be a better college experience for them. Now, through the chamber, what we've done is there's a website. It's called Hometown to Hometown. And that empowers an international student to actually, or their family actually, to reach out through that website and get an overall view of West Lafayette, Lafayette, and the campus. And that level of connectivity with home assists as well, and we're pretty proud of that.
This is WBAA's Ask the Mayor. You can send us questions on our email address, which is ask@wbaa.org. You can also tweet questions @WBAA News on Twitter today. I'd like to spend a good portion of the rest of our program talking to you about something that's kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the room at the mm-hmm. moment, which is going back a little bit to our talk last month where, and I apologize a little bit for giving you the third degree about how you spend the money that's in your political war chest.
I used to do that for a living, so I'm used to it.
So let me ask you, why in the world shouldn't we think that you should run for governor? Because you've been you've been critical of the current governor. You're a guy who's a centrist and could appeal to independents. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about running for re-election this year. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't this make sense?
Well, in all honesty, I think that there is a certain level. When I ran for office, I had no prior political experience. And to be a little boastful there, I think that has worked to our benefit. I think the city of West Lafayette has grown exponentially since I've been around because we're able to cooperate. We're able to build teams regardless of your political affiliation and work collaboratively together. And that's how I've always been. I've always been very good at building teams and trying to get things done. To this day, in my eighth year as an elected official, I still don't get politics. I don't understand how a political affiliation would supersede somebody's knowledge of doing the right thing. I don't know how a victory over a particular party interest would be more important than making sure that a community is well served. And because of that, I don't think that I'm qualified for higher elected office.
But doesn't it strike you that that is exactly what the electorate is looking for? Poll after poll has said, we, the electorate, are super tired of all of the partisan rancor at every level of government.
Sure.
And you have said on this program and on last month's that mm-hmm. you're not a terribly political guy. Huh. And this is exactly the same thing that worked for the guy who's working right across the way over here, Mitch mm-hmm. Daniels, mm-hmm. no prior political experience, mm-hmm. runs for governor, is very popular for 8 years, mm-hmm. gets a lot done, whether you agreed with him or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy you're friends with mm-hmm. and a guy you have a good relationship with.
Yep.
History does repeat itself. I mean, there are so many parallels here. Sure. I can't escape sure. it.
Well, but I honestly feel as though, man, you really kind of took the wind out of my sails. I just feel as though that
I should be putting the wind in your sails.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, why aren't you considering
this? Could we record this and get this to my wife when we're done? But the fact of the matter is that I feel, first off, I'm very fortunate to work in the community that I've lived in all my life. But I still feel politically I'm a very small fish. I don't know that I would have the street cred of a Mitch Daniels to pronounce myself as a potential gubernatorial candidate. I mean, am I confident that operationally I could do the job? Yes. Yes. I mean, I think that I can work both sides of the aisle. And I think also I have a good understanding of when you're involved in a tug of war, when to let go of one side of the rope. I think that that's just human nature insofar as the way that I've been raised. But, you know, unfortunately, politics is not all about the best candidate from time to time. Sometimes it's the candidate with the most money. Sometimes it's the candidate that has the most visible resume. Sometimes it's the candidate that can share a projected understanding of operations, yet without really having had that experience. It never ceases to amaze me, and this isn't just here in the state of Indiana, it's across the country, how many elected officials we have that are elected to be in charge of something but have never really led an organization. It's shocking to me, because to me, if you're going to lead, you should at least have had some prior leadership experience. But I'm flattered.
I think you're probably right about the name recognition mm-hmm. thing. And name recognition in the statewide election is huge.
Sure.
And it is probably true that your name is not a household name in outside of this area. Mm-hmm. So, but let me ask you a different side of that. Mm-hmm. Is the bigger problem for you name recognition? Because after all, nobody knew who Glenda Ritz was before she became superintendent of public instruction. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if the bigger problem is not you don't check a lot of the conservative Republican boxes that someone like Mike Pence checks. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it electoral politics wise, mm-hmm. the tougher thing for somebody like you would be trying to win a primary election, because you're going to have a harder time going at the conservative base than the incumbent governor is. Is that the bigger problem, perchance?
I think that's one of the symptoms of the bigger problem. You know, I think that the fact that my what gets me out of bed every morning and what makes me enthusiastically open the door to my office every day is the fact that I know we're going to get good work done. I know that we're going to provide quality service to the citizens that we serve, and it's done with the understanding of service first. When I look back over my shoulder, I am unaware of how that service is being interpreted by somebody who might be to the extreme right or to the extreme left. I'm unaware of that because what I see is I see the city's growing. I see that we're, one of the top two communities in the nation when it comes to investment and development. I see that we've got one of the top research universities in the world. And I see that it's all gelling and working well together. Now, if that was a political resume, and if those were the boxes that needed to be checked to make somebody qualified to run for governor, yeah, I might stick my hand in the air. But I know politically, I've not made a lot of friends because I do what I believe to be right, and I'm lowercase r, not right, higher case r, like politically right. And there are people that vote with their icon. They vote with a donkey or they vote with an elephant. And that's all there is to it. And I've had conversations with folks on both sides that the first thing they'll say is, well, I'm a Republican, so I can't agree with that.
At the same time, though, I am friends with a number of people who are political operatives on both sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. And I know there is a lot of, frankly, disinterest in the people who are the current front runners on both sides of the ticket. I know a lot of Democrats who don't like John Gregg. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of Republicans who don't like Mike Pence. Mm-hmm. And I think there are people who want someone who's more centrist or want a new voice or a new face to get into the race and at least begin that conversation. Mm-hmm. Even if you're not particularly interested in going through the political machinations, isn't it worthwhile for someone like yourself, who is a centrist, to go and provide that opposite idea? For you are the Hillary Clinton to the Bernie Sanders of the local political scene.
Well, I've never been compared to Hillary Clinton. That's a first. Way to go, Stan. Yeah, I agree. But I think that those dialogues oftentimes get shut down because they aren't vitriolic enough. They don't, for somebody to say, hey, can't we all get along? Or check it out. Look what we've been able to do with the spirit of cooperation as opposed to political bandering with each other. That doesn't play well in local markets because it seems to me anymore they want that, peak. They want that person that's going to get up there and inflame a certain component of their listenership or their readership or whichever.
Now, when you say they, do you mean voters or do you mean political operatives?
Yes. A little bit of both. The guys that are on the extreme sides of each team want to have that firebrand that they can respond to. And then I think sometimes that makes for good press. It makes for,
for easily written stories, whether
exactly.
It makes for good press.
Yeah,
as someone, a member of the media.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm a little sad that us in the media write stories like that.
Yeah, you and me both. But the fact of the matter is that an extremist oftentimes will get more attention than a centrist.
Sure.
And
I give you Donald Trump.
Right. Thank you very much. Bad hair and all. He gets the headlines he's included in a debate that he's got no.
He's the front runner.
Oh, wow. That's
He's number one in all of the polls.
Wow.
So tonight's debate will be very interesting.
Yeah.
You coined an interesting phrase a minute ago, which I think is very emblematic of this. You said, I think this is a symptom of the problem. And I was looking at it from both sides. And there are, to me, a striking number of people on both sides of the aisle who would be fascinating candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans, you, Greg Ballard from mm-hmm. Indianapolis, Duke Bennett from Terre Haute.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see any of the three of you. I'd love to cover a campaign that any of the three of you would run.
Mm-hmm.
On the Democratic side, Greg Goodnight from Kokomo, mm-hmm. Pete Buttigieg up in South Bend, Karen mm-hmm. Freeman Wilson in Gary. Again, three people who would run fantastically mm-hmm. interesting campaigns, and you could match up mm-hmm. anybody from 1D and 1R, pick any of those three mm-hmm. on either side, and it would be a really interesting race. But what I keep coming back to is there are individual reasons for each of these candidates that they're not running,
mm-hmm.
and it's what makes 2016 a really odd electoral year.
Sure.
Because you have a lot of talent that's pushing itself to the sides and just mm-hmm. staying on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why it's entirely possible you're going to get a rerun of 2012
mm-hmm.
with the same two people as the major party nominees.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I think there are a lot of voters who are ready for somebody different. Don't you?
I would I I would hope so. I mean, I really would hope so, because wouldn't it be neat to have Indiana sort of set a standard on how their governor is selected? It's selected by consensus throughout the state, and not just by somebody who's got the most money, somebody who's got the most financial backing from major corporations, somebody that really understands the need of Hoosiers, somebody that kind of gets what it's like to run a small government and expand that philosophy into larger government, somebody that worked cooperatively with both sides of the aisle and with their legislative branch, somebody who can communicate and sound sincere when they're talking. That's something that's always cracked me up. I never understand how you could have a conversation with somebody and you put a mic under their chin and all of a sudden they sound like a complete stranger. That's seemed a little odd to me. And I think it's abundantly clear that I'm not very good at that either. But it would be nice. It would be a great way to sort of start choosing our elected officials, because they then would represent the public that they serve. You know, when you have somebody who is elected by a single-digit percentile over somebody else, the one thing that you know for sure is that community, that state, even in some regards that country, is divided. And what does that person do? What would be the first thing that you would expect that person would do? They would try and get that division sealed. They would try and bring everything together. But oftentimes they don't. What ends up happening is they try and bring people that are either indecided or undecided or not 100% committed to bring them to their side so they can go ahead and continue with their agenda. And I think that's why oftentimes, whether it be in a city or in a state or in a country, that's why we stall. And that's why most oftentimes when it comes to trying to elect political candidates, you get a lot of the good ones sitting on the bench.
Well, I have to ask you, as somebody who's worked across the aisle, doesn't it just sound like you described something that you've already done and that you could run on?
But again, I don't think that anybody would take me seriously outside of these city limits. I think that because, you know, I'm not a known political entity, I don't make it my business to go and get on statewide programs. I mean, if there's something that's good that we get a lot of attention for in West Lafayette, the first thing I want to do is make sure that people that were actually responsible for it get the credit for it, whether it be my legislative branch or whether it be one of my department heads. They're the ones that do it. And that doesn't happen at that higher level. And because of that, I don't, you know, I'm not seeking attention at that level. I'm not trying to get statewide attention. I'm proud of what we've been able to do. You know, I am just in an elected office at the right time and proverbially the right place to make big things happen. And when I leave, I'm going to be able to look over my shoulder, I mean, touch wood, and say, look what we were able to do.
So you don't think it's possible to run an idea campaign now? It has to be ideological?
I think it has to be ideological, but it has to be based on a certain demographic that you feel is going to be the one that's going to empower you to be elected, to get elected.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there, but I may still keep talking with you about this, because I think it's an interesting discussion at the very least.
Like I said, I'm flattered. That's kind of cool to hear. I hope Mary wasn't listening.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Join us next week for our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rzeworski. And remember, you can find archived versions of this program at our website, WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for Ask the Mayor on WBAA comes from your membership and Butler, Fairman & Seifert, a civil engineering firm providing communities with professional expertise and guidance. Butler, Fairman & Seifert, civil engineering solutions for better communities. BFSENGR.com.